So one of the things that I'm fascinated by is sociology and psychology studies that they've done around how humans think and how humans interact with others. And one of my most favorite studies of all time is one called Selective Attention Test. And here's how it works. They got a teacher in a room with a group of people, an audience, and this teacher gives them the instructions of, hey, I'm about to show you a video where there's two basketball teams passing the ball to one another, and one's kind of overlaid over the other one. There's two videos combined into one, and these teams have different colored jerseys on, and I want you to count how many times Team A passes the ball to one another. And they're in a circle, and they're rotating in this circle as they pass the ball. So that's the challenge. The video gets ready to start, and he says, again, I want you to pay attention to how many passes these teams are going to make. And everybody, right before the video starts, everybody just leans in, right? Especially the competitive ones like me. I mean, I'm like, hey, if I'm going to win this competition, they're not going to trick me. And so everybody leans in, they're paying attention. Okay, Team A, how many passes? The video starts. And sure enough, it's kind of hard to tell. And these teams are moving and the ball's going a different direction. And everybody's leaning in and they're counting and like, do not take your eye off that ball, the ball for Team A. Here it goes. Here it goes. 1, 2, 3. And they get to the end of the video. The video finishes. It's about 20 seconds long. He goes, all right. The teacher says, okay, how many passes do you think Team A made? And somebody raises their hand and says, I think 15. And the class kind of begins to murmur. Anybody else think 15? Yeah, like most of the class raises their hand, 15. Okay. Anybody get any different numbers? Yeah, I got 16. I got 14. I got 17. Okay. Well, the correct number is 15. And obviously all the people that said 15, they start patting themselves on the back and they're all excited because they won the competition. But as they're gloating in their victory, the teacher continues and says, yeah, but did you see the gorilla? And everybody's like, what? What gorilla? I thought this was about basketball passes and counting Team A. I mean, we got that right. That was the challenge, right? And he said, no, did you see the gorilla? In the middle of these two teams passing the ball to one another, a guy in a gorilla suit just walks right through the middle of them, stops, beats on his chest, and then keeps walking. And everybody's like, there's no way. Like, we did not see that. We would have seen that. We would have noticed that. And sure enough, they play the video back. He goes, I want you to watch it again. Clear as day. I mean, right in the middle of these basketball passes, he walks right through the center of the circle, makes a bunch of movement, and then walks out of the camera shot. And almost nobody, when they do this, they've done this research study so many times, something like 90% of people miss seeing the gorilla. It's because we're so focused on the passes that we miss the other things going on around us. And this is what mayhem does. This is what mayhem does. Mayhem, when we have storms of life, the craziness of life, when it hits us, it can cause us to miss seeing other things in life. We kicked off this series last week called Surviving Mayhem. What to do when life throws at you what you don't expect, don't desire, don't ask for, and don't plan for. And we talked about how May, specifically the month of May, can be a month full of mayhem. You can't spell mayhem without May. And we talked about last week the number of graduation parties you're gonna have to attend this month, and the number of end-of-year classroom parties, and all that's going on in life. And who knew that in the midst of all of this already mayhem of a month, that we'd have an earthquake thrown into the middle of it? That wasn't on anybody's bingo card. And our goal in this series is not just to survive mayhem, but is it possible to thrive in the midst of some of the hardest things that life can throw at us? Last week we said this, that mayhem, it doesn't send us a save the date. It doesn't give us a heads up. And so because of that, we've got to prepare. And last week, week one of this series, if you missed it, go back and watch it, because we talked about how it's what we do before the mayhem strikes that is so often the most important thing we can do. But what if we're too late for that? What if we're already in the midst of mayhem? Maybe you're in mayhem now, or you'll find yourself in a season of mayhem and you think to yourself, well, preparation's great, Adam, but I'm past that point. I'm already in it. We are in it and we need help now. And that's what we're gonna talk about today and next week as well. But to get us started with today, here's another trait about mayhem. It clouds our vision. Mayhem clouds our vision. It fogs up the windows and the mirrors of our lives. It's like wearing glasses in the rain. If you've ever had glasses on and you're walking through, you know, really heavy rainfall, it is like almost impossible to see. We in the midst of mayhem, we don't see clearly and we don't see straight. We don't see all there is to see. And what happens is we get laser focused on the mayhem in front of us, the problem in front of us, or the problem at hand, that we can no longer see the bigger picture. And when that happens, we end up being at the mercy of mayhem. We get mastered by it. It owns us. It rules us. And no one wants this. I mean, regardless of your faith background, your church background, you know, no one in the world would want to be mastered by mayhem. But for followers of Jesus, this is all the more important because we already have a master. We already have a king. But again, for all of us, whether we're Christian, not a Christian, faith person, not a faith person, this is our battle. Our battle is to maintain our vision during times of mayhem, to keep the main thing, to make sure that the important things don't suffer just because of the urgent storm at hand. So today we're gonna take a few minutes and talk about how to get our vision back when mayhem begins to steal it. And if possible, to keep it from taking it in the first place. And in order to do this, we're gonna go on a journey with the Apostle Paul. And if you don't know Paul, Paul was originally named Saul. He was a persecutor of the early church in the first century, just a few years after Jesus' death and resurrection. This movement gets going in Jerusalem and Judea, and it starts to spread around the Mediterranean. And Saul was one of the leaders of the opposition to the movement of Jesus. He would go around arresting these Christians and breaking up these gatherings. And he would persecute them and throw them in jail. And he was really, really opposed to it until one day he met Jesus in a personal way. And it changed his life and it changed his name. He went from Saul to Paul. And he went from being the opposer of the early church to the builder of the early church, one of the most influential figures, not just in the time of the early church, but really in the history of the world. And he went around the Mediterranean, he started all these different churches, and then he would write letters to these churches. And a lot of these letters were preserved, they were passed around from church to church, and eventually they made their way into our modern day Bible. And so we're gonna go on a journey with Paul over the next few minutes, and we're gonna start with one of the most commonly quoted verses that he wrote in the first century. And it's not just quoted, it's often misquoted, as we'll see in just a minute. And then we're gonna go to the book of Acts and look at an account from the Apostle Paul's life of some mayhem that he experienced firsthand. And then we're gonna wrap up by looking at another letter that he wrote that's gonna give us the solution and helping us maintain our vision during mayhem. We're gonna start in Paul's letter to the Philippians, to Christians living in Philippi. He says this in Philippians 4. He says, "I've learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty." And if you're familiar with Paul's story at all, you know this is true. He experienced the best of the best in the world, and he experienced the worst of the worst and everything in between. And Paul's saying, look, I know all these things, but yet I have learned to be content. Whatever the circumstances, whatever mayhem comes into my life, I can be content. He continues. He says, "I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, well, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want." He says it's a secret. It's like a cheat code, or it's like a life hack that's not widely known. It's the secret to being content. And this is actually a different word than the word from the previous. In our English Bible, it's the same word, but this word means more than just being content. It means to abound. It means to thrive. And he's saying, look, I've learned the secret to being able to abound or to thrive in any and every situation. Nothing's left out. Every situation, Paul is saying, it's possible. It's possible to be content no matter how much mayhem we are experiencing. And then this next verse is one of the most popular and one of the most quoted. You're gonna recognize it as soon as I put it up on the screen, but he's continuing this thought of the secret to being content in any and every situation is, "I can do all this through him who gives me strength. You may recognize it by a different version, a translation of scripture that says this: I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. You heard this before? Have you seen it printed on a t-shirt before? I grew up in different athletic ministries, FCA, Athletes in Action, and this was like the quintessential verse of any athletic ministry in a high school or college campus anywhere in the country. And the way you would often see this play out is you'd see people relate this to some sort of athletic feat. They would think, you know, when I'm really, really tired in the fourth quarter, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, which is like, okay, that's sort of a stretch on that verse, but maybe. And then, you know, somebody, you know, gets up onto a barbell and they're going to deadlift like 650 pounds. And they're like, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, you know? And it's like, yeah, I don't know. That's a little bit of a stretch. For me, when I read this verse, my mind goes back to my freshman year of college, a full quarter of a century ago, okay? 25 years ago, the early 2000s. And it was the very first game that I dressed out on the University of Georgia football team. I had walked on in the spring of that year. I made the team, and as a walk-on, you don't really know if you're going to dress out or not. It's kind of a big deal. You get to put on the silver britches and run out of the tunnel. And I had grown up a dog fan. And so, I mean, this was like dream come true, right? And so they post who's going to dress out the Thursday before the game in the locker room. And so I'm leaving the locker room. I go check, you know, it's like, you know, Christmas morning, you know, and it's like, you know, and I see my name up there and I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm going to get to dress out. So show up that morning, we go through our pregame warmups and stuff, and I am loving every minute of it. I'm just soaking it up, right? I'm a kid in a candy store. And then we go back into the locker room. They're inside Sanford Stadium. And this was before all the Kirby Smart renovations. You know, back then it was kind of bare bones. It was, our locker room consisted of white cinder block walls and old red metal lockers. And it was just kind of, again, it was just very, very sterile setting. And so we're back there, and my buddy had given me a heads up. He's like, hey, you're gonna love what's gonna happen in a few minutes. So I was like anticipating something, but they say, hey, all the players into the showers. And so we all get up, we walk into the showers. It's about 100 of us crammed in there, and they cut the lights off. Well, there's no windows back there. It's literally all cinder blocks on every, you know, every side of this thing. And so when they cut the lights off, it is completely pitch black. And we're sitting there and it is silent. You could hear a pin drop. And all of a sudden, Verron Haynes, who was a running back of ours, and he was from New York, he had this big bassy New York accent. Verron screams at the top of his lungs, I could do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. And less than a second later, the other 100 guys standing in the shower, crammed. I mean, again, where you're crammed in there in your football pads and everything. Everyone crammed. All the other 100 guys scream out as well, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And then Verron again, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Back and forth. We did this about 4 or 5 times. It was so loud, the walls were shaking. And I loved it. I was like, oh my gosh, this experience couldn't get any better. This is just amazing. But as much as I loved it, that's not really what this verse means either. Unfortunately, I don't think Paul had 21st century college football in his mind when he wrote this. What Paul meant when he wrote this was, regardless of the mayhem we are in, we can still be content. And more than just being content, we can abound. We can thrive. And Paul didn't just say this, Paul actually lived this out. And there's a great example of this that's captured in the book of Acts. The book of Acts is the 5th book of the New Testament. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, all the gospel accounts. And then you have the book of Acts, which is the Acts of the Apostles, the Acts of the early church. And it tracks a lot of what happened in the few decades after Jesus' death and resurrection with the start of the new church. And a lot of it highlights the life of Paul and his travels around the Mediterranean to these different places and these different churches. In fact, the letter he wrote to the Philippians, we're about to look at an account of him being in Philippi, something he experienced in Philippi. So when he writes, hey, I can be content in any and all circumstances, he's probably assuming, hey, you Philippians, you know that I can be because you saw what happened in my life. Here's what's happening. They're in Philippi. They're spreading the good news about Jesus. And they've got this one person that's following them. It says in the scriptures that this woman had a spirit that could predict the future. And so she's following Paul and Silas and this group of early believers. And it says that she keeps crying out really loudly. These men are servants of the Most High God. And they are teaching you how to be saved. And that was true. So obviously she had some sort of insight there. But even though it was positive press, it eventually began to annoy Paul. It literally says that Paul got annoyed by this after several days of it going on again and again and again. So he turns to her and he casts this future predicting spirit out of her. And then they go on about their business. Well, what they didn't know was that there was people in the town that were making money off of this woman and her gift to predict the future. And how do you think they responded or reacted when now all of a sudden they knew that that income stream was gone? Yeah, not great. They weren't real happy about it. So look what happens next. Acts chapter 16, verse 19. When her owners realized that their hope of making money was gone, they seized Paul and Silas and dragged them into the marketplace to face the authorities. They brought them before the magistrates and said, "These men are Jews, and they're throwing our city into an uproar by advocating customs unlawful for us Romans to accept or practice." And this wasn't true. Again, they were just upset and they wanted to get rid of Paul and Silas and these other followers of Jesus. And we know this wasn't true because Paul himself was a Roman. They're gonna find that out later on in this account. So it's like, wait a second, he's a Roman citizen. So this is not even a true accusation. The crowd ends up joining in. It says the crowd joined in the attack against Paul and Silas, and the magistrates ordered them to be stripped and beaten with rods. After they had been severely flogged, they were thrown into prison, and the jailer was commanded to guard them carefully. This is mayhem. Wrongfully accused, beaten badly, thrown in jail. And this isn't modern day jail where you get a bed and a bathroom and three meals a day. That this is first century jail. We can't imagine how bad that experience would be. What would you do in this situation? What would you do if you found yourself in this kind of mayhem? Look at what Paul and Silas do. It says about midnight, Paul and Silas were praying. To which we think to ourselves, of course they were. We're gonna talk more about this next week in week three of this series, but we all pray when mayhem hits, don't we? We all pray. But Paul and Silas were not praying the way that we typically pray. And they weren't praying the way that we would assume that they would be praying. Look at what it says. About midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God, and the other prisoners were listening to them. They were worshiping God. They were singing. They were joyful. From a jail cell, with their bodies still covered in their own blood, and their muscles and their bones still sore from the beating they had received just a few hours earlier. How do you do this? How can you sing? How can you be joyful at a time like that? And isn't that what we want? When we're in the middle of our mayhem, whatever life may throw at us, whatever hardship may come our way, don't we want to respond like that? Wouldn't it be amazing to have that be our response? So how do we do this? Well, Paul gives us the answer in another letter that he wrote. This time it was to the people living in Corinth. Corinth was a city on the coast in modern day Greece. Paul had visited there several times and he had faced many trials there in similar fashion to what he experienced in Philippi. In fact, in 2 Corinthians, he talks about his previous painful visit to see the folks in Corinth. in Corinth. And so as he's writing them, he's describing the hardship that he's experienced. But how it's not just hardship that we've actually miraculously held up through it. He says, we were pressed down, but we were not crushed. We were persecuted, but we were not abandoned by God. We were not left on our own and by ourselves. We were struck down. Yeah, we were beaten, we were persecuted, but we were not destroyed. Because we know, he says, just a few verses after this, he says, because we know the one who raised Jesus from the dead is gonna raise us from the dead as well. He's gonna present us with you to himself. Basically, Paul was saying, look, through all of this that we're facing, all of these trials, all of this pain, God is up to something. And so, because God is up to something, look at verse 16. He says, therefore, we do not lose heart. We do not lose heart. Isn't that what we're trying to avoid in mayhem? This is what we're tempted to lose during the storms of life that move in on us. We are tempted to lose heart. But Paul is saying, look, even with all we face, we did not lose heart. In fact, though outwardly we are wasting away, which if you looked at our lives, Paul is saying, if you saw any of this, you know that outwardly we are wasting away, and it looks like we're wasting away. Outwardly we're wasting away, but inwardly we are being renewed day by day. Even though the outside is pressing in on us and we're pressed down, and we're struck down, we're still being renewed inwardly every single day. How? How? Isn't this what we all want? How did he do this? Well, it's because Paul had a different perspective. And he didn't lose his perspective in the midst of mayhem. Look at what he says next. Inwardly, we're being renewed day by day for our light and momentary troubles. To which anybody that knew Paul in this time and read his letter and knew what he experienced firsthand would be like, what? Light and momentary? Paul, you were beaten within an inch of your life, and then you were thrown in jail. In one instance, he was taken outside a city and they stoned him. They thought they had stoned him to death. They thought Paul was dead. And so they leave him outside the walls of this city. And Paul was not dead. He actually ends up waking up. He gets up and goes back into the town and starts preaching the good news again. People that were familiar with these stories would go, wait a second, Paul, your troubles are light and momentary. You think about your life, my life, the mayhem that we might experience. The last way we would describe it is light and momentary. But here's what Paul is saying. He's saying, you know that thing in your life? That trouble that has come into your life, that storm that has come into your life, that mayhem that's come into your life? I know it feels heavy, but there is something heavier. And your mayhem is light compared to that. There's something bigger going on, and when your perspective is fixed on that, you will actually see your mayhem as light. And you know that thing in your life that feels like it's never going away? It feels permanent. It feels like this is taking forever to fix. Well, there's something that's more long-lasting. There's something bigger and more long-lasting going on in your life, and compared to that, your mayhem is momentary. It's as if Paul was saying this, that you can see your mayhem however you want. You can see your mayhem however you want. Isn't this true? For us today? It's like, wait a second. Yeah, you can see, and I can see, we can see our mayhem however we want. In fact, that's often the only thing that we have control over in situations like these. We want to control the outcome. We want to get things fixed. We want to move along. Well, we can't affect those things, but what we can affect is our perspective. What we can control is our attitude. What we can control is what we are fixing our eyes on in those moments. Paul's saying you can see your mayhem however you want to, and you don't have to do this. I don't have to do this. But Paul believed there was something bigger than his mayhem. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. Paul assumed that God was up to something, even in the midst of his mayhem. He continues, he says, so we fix our eyes. We fix our eyes not on what is seen, meaning what our eyes are drawn to see, what we focus on so quickly, the easiest thing to see, the most urgent thing to see, the pain point in our lives, the mayhem in our lives. We fix our eyes not on what is seen. It's really easy to see those things. But instead on what is unseen. We fix our eyes on what they don't naturally see. What's not right in front of us. What's not just the urgent storm at hand. Why? He continues. He says, since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. Paul's giving us insight into the mindset that he had, his mindset and perspective, the mindset and perspective that enabled him to sing from a jail cell, the mindset and a perspective that enabled him and allowed him to live out truly, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I can be content and I can abound and thrive in any and every situation. This was his belief. This was his perspective. This was his mindset, that there is something bigger than your mayhem. There's something bigger, something weightier, something longer lasting. Paul saw through his pain and suffering to his Savior and his King and was confident that he was up to something through it. Paul was convinced that he had a God-given destiny on his life to spread the good news of Jesus in the first century and to create these churches and launch the early church movement. He had a God-given destiny on his life, and that's what he kept his eyes fixed on. And if I can just encourage you this morning, you have a God-given destiny as well. You do too. Even if you're not a Christian here today, you're not a faith person today, we believe that God created you on purpose and for a purpose. You have a God-given destiny. Your life has divine calling on it. You are an eternal being with a role to play in God's great kingdom. And your hardship, your struggle, your storm, your mayhem, when it moves in, it can seem like it's all there is. But today, I just want you to know your mayhem can't stop the work of God's kingdom in your life. Your singleness, your loneliness, your relationship issues, your marriage struggles, your financial strain, your job loss, your health complications or diagnosis, those things can't stop the work of God's kingdom in your life unless they're all you see. Unless you see them as the biggest thing going on in your life, the heaviest thing going on in your life, the most permanent thing going on in your life. Because when you see it that way, you hand those things the keys of your life. You lose perspective. And when you do that, mayhem wins. It becomes the boss of you. It becomes your master. But as followers of Jesus, we already have a master. And he's up to great things in our lives, way heavier things, eternal things. And when we can see things that way, our mayhem becomes light and momentary. Mayhem doesn't have to win. We can maintain our vision and our perspective through it and hold fast to the work that God is doing in us. That's how you survive, not just survive, but thrive through mayhem. Let's pray together. Father, you don't promise us that things would be easy. In fact, Jesus, you said that in this world we will have trouble, but take heart, for you have overcome the world. And so today, God, we all come in here with varying levels of mayhem in our lives. And maybe for some of us in the room, it's really smooth sailing right now, but a month from now, 6 months from now, a year from now, mayhem's gonna show up and it's gonna knock on the front door. And God, whether we're in that moment now or we're in that moment a year from now, God, would you just give us strength to see what is unseen, to fix our eyes on what you're doing in our lives, for us to be able to see the God-given destiny that you've put on each of us, and that we would step up into that calling and not let our challenges, our mayhem, and our struggles distract us, cloud our vision, and pull us away from that. Would you give us the strength to do that by the power of your Holy Spirit? And we ask it in the name of Jesus.